Hello, my beautiful Technicolor rainbow. I'm Jacob Mangley, and you are listening to Couch Potato Salad, the finest nonsense about pop culture served up fresh for your ears. And today, hey, we're eating a nice big banana split. It's the banana split movie. And as a result, the banana split is filled with human blood and children's tears. You probably shouldn't eat that. Just saying. Children's tears taste awful. Blood varies from person to person. But yeah, the Banana Splits movie. What happens when the executives at WB decide, hey, Five Nights at Freddy's is, or at least was, popular, and I just did a huge mountain of cocaine. What do we have that's kind of similar? Well, we have the Banana Splits. They were guys in mascot costumes back in the 60s. Perfect. You green light that, I'll go get another cocaine mountain. I mean, I myself don't understand why they didn't go with Jabberjaw. I mean, we all know he had a pile of corpses in his basement, right? I mean, we all knew it. We all just didn't want to say anything. We thought he'd get better or that he'd come for us, but knock, knock, knock. I had a problem. I also am confident most of you didn't have Jabberjaw. I don't know who Jabberjaw is. So if you do, hooray! I mostly know him from the Cartoon Network Groovy about him. Those were a series of shorts on Cartoon Network, for those of you who might not be aware of those. They're basically musical-themed. Also in the middle of those, they also once played the theme song to the Banana Splits, which Boomerang later used as a sing-along. That is how I met the Banana Splits. That's also how I learned about Jabberjaw, though they actually used his son for the photo shoot. As the original disappeared. I probably shouldn't have made the mountain of corpses joke with that, but screw it, I got nothing to lose if Jabberjaw comes to kill me. Well, didn't I begin this video talking about a direct-to-video Banana Splits movie? Oh yeah. So the Banana Splits. They were a show in the 1960s, I believe. I need a quick Google to clarify that. That was basically just goofy shenanigans and costumes. I've never seen it. Just the opening credits. Oh! There is something neat about it. It was created by Sid Marty Krofft, the guys who created H.R. Puffin stuff and Land of the Lost. The original Land of Lost, not the one where Will Ferrell for the umpteenth time, before he'd sell it for the umpteenth time for Get Hard, sold his dignity for a quick paycheck to be in a terrible reboot of a goofy 60s show. And I was right, it was a 60s show. The summary I got from Google is also interesting to say the least. For hitting the big time with H.R. Puffin stuff, you can't get a little if you can't get enough. They are talking about weed. I know it's the most obvious joke, but it's a show called HR Puffin stuff. If they were not talking about weed, they should have been. And any respective rival would probably just be a guy in Shaggy from Scooby-Doo cosplay place smoking a doobie for about an hour. Or Tommy Chong. I think he's still alive. God, please let him still be alive. Oh, thank God he's still alive. You know, when I began this episode, I didn't think I'd be speculating on whether Tommy Chong was dead or alive. But I would watch a H&R Puffin stuff reboot that was just Tommy E. Chong interviewing people while high as shit and possibly getting high with people on top of that. Or just a review show of that. Like, we have three different streaming networks and all sorts of weird pseudo-reality shows and all sorts of cool pseudo-reality shows like The Chef Show. That show Jon Favreau does where he and the guy who taught him to cook for the film Chef go around. It's also the film where we found out that Gwyneth Paltrow doesn't remember what Spider-Man and that she was even in a Spider-Man movie. And I'm not touching the hornet's nest that is the Disney being greedy and Sony being stupid, stupid split. Well, okay, I just did a little, but not enough to get swarmed by hornets. Where was I? Oh yeah, I was reading a Google summary before getting to the to this so bad it's good movie. Sid and Marty Croft lent their psychedelic touch to the costume design and sets of this late 60s Hanna-Barbera children's series. Laugh track laden collection of live action buffoonery and animated segments for undiscerning young minds. Okay, that's kind of asshole-ish. I mean, this was before Hanna-Barbera put their soul in a jar and put it in a soundproof room so they wouldn't have to hear it squeal wheels and wails of agony as they slowly drove their company into the ground. I am getting way off topic this episode, and I love it. Costume animals Flegel, Bingo, Drooper, and Snorky would engage in all manner of harmless nonsense and even strap on musical instruments and perform hippy-dippy rock numbers. Hippy-dippy rock numbers. Did I write this? Is this a Total Recall situation where I wrote summaries for Google at one point and then erased my brain? Am I going to go on to... Am I going to end up married to Sharon Stone? Please say yes. Am I going to have to end up talking to my smug past self in a video that may or may not be real? Well, it all have been a hallucination. I don't know, Billy. These t-shirts are too tight. And the show remains firmly lodged in the memories of baby boomers as well as a theme song. Theme tune. Okay, I probably didn't write this because I am not a robot trying to learn the ways of the human, as this clearly sounds. But yeah, that's what I remember it for. They played the theme song on Boomerang, and that's also how I got to know what Jabberjaw is. I've seen one or two episodes of Jabberjaw, and it's basically like, as I learned from watching Mr. Inner's reviews, a good chunk of Hanna-Barbera's later output, basically Scooby-Doo, but with a coat of paint on it. In this case, he was a shark. Now, at least they had, like, creative-ish characters. Like, they took the cast of the Josie and the Pussycats and cats. With long tails and ears for hats. I did not know that was a comic book first for the longest goddamn time. Like, a good decade of my life before I learned that was an Archie comic first. Maybe two. At least, I was at least in my teen years or middle school years when I started getting to Archie. And even then, it took me a little bit before I learned that. I wonder why there hasn't been a cartoon reboot, though. Like, I know Riverdale exists right now, so that's probably why not just this moment. But, like, it has a good premise. And you can also make an adult cartoon if you want, especially with the latest comic series. I'm stalling, aren't I? Just a little. So the Banana Splits movie is about a family whose names I have to look up because they're pretty cliche characters. But the Banana Splits movie is a 2019 reboot of the 60s series I just brought up as a horror concept. Because again, Friday Nights at Freddy's was popular a few years ago when this was presumably put into motion. And it was, we already spent all the money on this. Might as well make it anyways. We'll just send it direct to video. Someone will buy it. And yeah, my friend Corey rented it for us to watch and have a fun movie night and laugh at its ridiculousness. It worked. You got me to watch it. It's directed by Danny Sheikha Esterhazy. I am sorry if I butchered your name, Danny. She honestly hasn't directed a ton of films. So she's directed or previously directed The Trials of Rasputin, H&G, and Level 16, a sci-fi. A thriller about teenage girls and cats. In a weird school that's teaching them to be perfect. I only know that because I read it on Wikipedia. In the 2009 film Black Feel, the Canadian historical drama about a lot of a triangle between a man and two sisters. Weird kind of jumps to make. Like from sort of thriller from a period drama to a sort of thriller sci-fi to a goofy semi-black comedy horror movie about the Banana Splits. Like, her career has taken a weird trajectory. She could not have predicted. No one goes to film school to direct films hoping to make the Banana Splits movie. Though my brother did go to film school to make a Huckleberry Hound film, but given his life was a tragedy that ended in his untimely death with his son forced to pick up his legacy, for his poor closeted gay father. It's actually an interesting subject. And if you think I'm making that for a cheap joke, no. That's part of the plot of the amazing comic book exit stage left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles, which is a real thing I did not make up. Go ahead and Google it. I'll wait. Playing with my Ekans. Playing with my Ekans. Do, 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 do. Okay, you did it. Told you. I might review that at some point. I really do like that comic, even if the creator's previous comic about the Flintstones is even better. Bit on the nose about the satire, but I still enjoy it and has some great gags. And it has the line, "We committed a genocide, Barney," and actually makes it work. Yes, that is also real. I miss DC's partnership with Hanna-Barbera. We got some good shit out of that. Okay, enough of my weird tangents. Also, one thing I should know before I go into the plot for this film that's, like, notable is that the film music was done by Patrick Stump of Fall Out Boy. His name sounds familiar for anyone who's not a Fall Out Boy fan. You may have also seen him on Star vs. the Forces of Evil as Rubarian. Fun facts like that are why you come to the show. That and the Jabberjaw murder conspiracies. Alright, so I can keep this in a tight hour. Let's can this fish. The Banana Splits is about centers around a show called The Banana Splits. A show within a show that's kind of the old children's host in front of a live audience type show. It was more common when there were local more things done directly by local TV stations instead of just news and all that. You can see that kind of thing in UHF with Uncle Funzie's Clubhouse, or on The Simpsons with Krusty the Clown. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey! Had to do it right at least once. Had to do something right in my life. Yeah, that starts the weirdness right there. There's this live-action show of animatronics, and it's just like, they don't do that. I love children's television. I watch a fuck ton of cartoons. That should be obvious from the fact that about 60% of what I've reviewed so far is cartoons. I have other things related to cartoons planned. The very next review, the very next podcast I have lined up is me doing a top 10 list of Steven Universe episodes. So I have an OKKO one planned for the week after that. I also have a Zining Women one planned, but that's not a cartoon. That's a very awesome sitcom that's now available on Hulu. And again, I'm getting off topic, so let's get back on. But yeah, the Banana Splits have a live show. It's fairly popular. And it's especially popular with Harley, a young boy who's a bit, slowly growing a bit old for the show. Might be somewhere on the autism spectrum. I say this as someone who is diagnosed with Asperger's and thus is on the spectrum himself. I mean, obsessing with something a little too young for you, being kind of out of touch with reality. He once gets hit by a car because he jumps out in front of it for the Banana Split. Still, he seems like 7 or 8 at most. So he seems like he's not that much old for it. Like, yeah, it's a 5 and 6 year old show, but it's still. But yeah, like, this kind of
like, that's, as I said, it is still kind of weird that this kind of show exists in 20 goddamn 19. Like, it takes place in present day, complete with smartphones and a blogger character we'll get to in a second. Harley, however, is probably the most likable character in the film. He's a lovable kid. He loves the splits. And while he might be a bit behind in his growth, he's still just a nice, sweet kid who really loves his brother and mom. Speaking of which, his mom, Beth, is a loving mother who's struggling a bit, but got him tickets to see the Banana Splits for his birthday. Because she's a cool mom. Part of the reason she's having trouble is Austin, her son, who's rocking, rolling all night and partying every night, and also looks perpetually stoned. Like, I can't tell if the actor just lit up before his takes. He's trying to look stoned because of the character being kind of a burnout and kind of lost. He's 19 and he parties all night and doesn't get along with his stepdad because he's a dick. Which, right now, I'm making a stepdad is a dick count for films, because that just comes up too damn often. Like, I may not get along the greatest with my stepmom, but not every step-parent is an asshole. Even mine and I are just don't really click, but I wouldn't consider her an asshole. Like, step-parents can be nice, or can be more like a father to the kid than their actual parent, may not be around, and may be kind of a prick. So I'm not a real big fan of this trope. But yeah, the dad, who I'm not even acknowledging his name, is a huge dick who doesn't really like being called away from work, which, as my buddy Corey, who I once did another couple of podcasts with, correctly predicted, which once he pointed out that, like, I wasn't really paying enough attention to the character to think of that cliche, but, like, is cheating on his wife with his secretary, and while he's going away for work, which, as she rightfully points out, and Harley is his son, he could take a fucking break from that for the day. But no, he is. He's cheating on his wife. And the film outright says, has Beth say, really? That cliche? Like, hey, filmmakers, come in close. Pointing out your problems doesn't mean you don't have them. Like, if you make a joke out of it, fine. But, like, if you make it into an actual joke and it's, like, clearly there for parody's sake, like the gay best friend and it's, isn't it romantic? That film is a parody of rom-com where the lead ends up inside one. So the character being an over-the-top gay stereotype to the ninth power, basically a less annoying Jack from Will and Grace. Hey, Grace. It's funny because they basically dialed it up, and that is something that you see in most gay characters and most rom-coms are stereotypes. I'm sure there's some that not, but the handful I've seen in them certainly are. Though In and Out was, no, that wasn't a rom-com. Really good film, though. But back to this turtle one. So yeah, the family goes to see the Banana Splits. And we have a whole cast of characters who are about to be murdered by animatronics. So let's get to them. There's Rebecca, the producer of the show. She's pointless other than to set up the premise, really. Like, literally, she's just there to be kind of harried, get into arguments later, and then die. Oh. I did just spoil one death for the film. And spoiler alert, I will be getting into some of the deaths for the film. So if you do want to see the film unspoilered, I'd recommend skipping the rest of this review. And I will be putting a spoiler alert on the thing. But since a lot of you might be checking this out just to see just how bad this is, away we go as we get back to it. There's Paige, who's the Paige, and introduces the show and does all that work. Also working behind the scenes are Carl, played by Lionel Newton, who I've never heard of, but gives me a really heavy Malcolm McDowell vibe. Like, just crazy eyes, white beard, and later in the film, after the splits go berserk, he just goes absolutely nuts. It is glorious. But yeah, he like treats them like their own children. As I said, early on, like, they're driving. Alright, now where were we? Oh, yes. Day 37 in a row of the Jabberjaw murder trial. To take an excerpt from the Rodney Dangerfield book, No Respect, No Respect at All, Volume 4, or The Voyage Home. Rappin' Rodney started to get suspicious of his pal and protege Jabberjaw around this time after the tragic death of Clamhead. Not a death so tragic that Rodney didn't proceed to spend an entire page riffing on the ways his head sounded like vagina. In his defense, though, Clamhead had covered his head in a hamburger bun and said, "See, no one will eat. He won't eat me. I'm his pal. I'm his..." And those were his last words. It was then that Jabberjaw started to really go off the rails and blame Nixon for everything. Specifically a hallucination of Nixon he had got from some bad acid his lawyer had advised him not to take before the trial. He did not listen, and oh yeah, right, that's an episode for another day. Hey, we were talking about the Banana Splits movie. Okay, so I was going through the Banana Splits character roster, because it's such a rich and deep character, and certainly not just basically a bunch of stock character tied and spit and duct taped and what's its together. We had our loving family, our kooky mad scientist who wears a welding mask and is pretty cavalier about vehicular manslaughter. I mean, that's something I didn't get to. The guy who created the Banana Splits is just like, "Oh, you rascals, you almost ran him over." Not those exact words, but that's his fucking tone towards, "Oh my god, my robots nearly ran over a child." I mean, the guy goes insane later, but I am 100% certain that he was never really that sane to begin with. Yes, and sadly does not survive the film. Also, as a heads up, there will be spoilers like that throughout the rest of the review. You have been warned.
Okay, so we have Paige, the hostess, as it says on the Wikipedia page. But really, she's more like she hosts it and does the live show stuff. But she's also like feels like a literal Paige as she talks to like the back office. Get it? Yeah. There's also Stevie, their co-star on the show, who I swear to God looks like Harvey Weinstein. I mean, my friend pointed out, but he looks like a younger version of him. But like at one point, he's in like a robe in his underwear, like hitting on Paige and acting like a creepy douche nozzle and just like. What made you decide to reference the biggest sex monster of the last two decades is in your goddamn direct-to-video horror film of the banana goddamn splits? Also, he wears like a sailor suit and carries a lollipop despite very obviously being in his late teens, early 20s, maybe even mid-20s. He is entertaining, though, just because he's just such a douche, and later relishes in telling the banana splits their show is canceled. Unsurprisingly, this is a bad move. Even less surprisingly, he turns out to be their first victim. And that... More on that in a bit, as the kills are surprisingly creative, and I give them. Some are a bit lazy, but the gore effects are immaculate, and I'll go more into them in a second. And there's also Doug the intern, but I honestly forgot he existed, and he dies. And then there's Andy. Oh my fucking god, Andy. Andy is the vice president at the network. Well, he just got promoted and decides, apropos of nothing, to cancel the banana splits because they're old and boring. Even though the show is still turning a profit, even though the animatronics are highly advanced robots, they could probably put to work in something else, because he wants to just junk them for theme park shit, even though that makes no goddamn sense. Again, these are highly advanced robots, even with them going murder crazy, which is only because their creator is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, and no one bothered to, you know, buy a second engineer to make sure that both there's someone to carry on if Clyde dies. Which, this is Hollywood. Even with Clyde having been there since the beginning, given his advanced age. Like, he looks to be about, like, 60 at the least. Maybe late 50s, but I'm leaning more towards 60. Towards 60, late 60s or mid 60s. Or the swinging 60s. But, yeah. Andy decides to cancel the show. I'm sure if he didn't get murdered in this movie, he'd have a bright future at Netflix. But, no. Andy obnoxious. And he's a, like, just... Like, he's, like, that. This is where the so bad it's good starts to kick in, because it starts, like, I mean, there is some so bad it's good early in the film before they get to the studio. Like, you have the kid, you have main kid Harley just sort of jump scaring his mom in a Snorky costume, Snorky being the elephant of the banana splits.
Though, to be fair, it is also kind of funny because he screams too, but not because he was trying to scare her because for lame jump scare, but because he was legitimately startled by her. Like, that's such a little kid thing to do. It's adorable. But, like, here, it's like, besides the stupidity, there's just the fact that he's doing it because it's me, and he basically, like, ambushes the producer about it. Like, he ambushes Rebecca, who admittedly isn't that important in this movie, and is basically in there just for that conversation. And I also think he only showed up to cancel the show in person, but it's like, dude, how much of a dick do you have to be to cancel a show right before it goes on when the person is super busy? And this is 2019! I mean, I'm not, like, doubting an executive could be so stupid, but it doesn't make him any less stupid. If they both weren't killed by maniacal insane animatronics, this very day, she would have probably gone to one of a million internet websites, and he would have gotten fired, and the show probably would have gotten renewed. Because his unprofessional actions, combined with the fact that he canceled the show, and someone on the other line at the network was clearly against this, because it is stupid. I mean, yeah, I admit, as I said before, the whole, oh, this is a live show with, like, costume guys and all that, in 20 goddamn 19 is stupid, but the show is still profitable. Like, networks have killed profitable or promising shows, see my Netflix joke. No, but they aren't that stupid. When presumably the Banana Split show really doesn't cost them hardly anything. They have a full set. They do about the same thing every time. They probably only have to really pay for the animatronics maintenance, which unless that's really expensive, they have no real just cause to get rid of it for cost cutting. And if the show's still stealing merchandise, because at the beginning of the film, his characters are somewhat bland, but Beth is genuinely memorable. I just have trouble with names, plus this movie is a blur of weirdness. But yeah, like, Beth buys Harley, like, a Banana Splits one for his birthday, and again, he has a full fucking Snorky costume. Unless he creepily made that himself, or impressively, it's kind of, like, in the between area, but the area, or she made that for him. They're still selling merch! I mean, this isn't like Invader Zim or Young Justice where they're giving the bullshit explanation. Well, that's not the demographic we want to reach. He just outright admits he hates the show and is pulling that fucker who got rid of WCW and created a Pinky Elmira in the Brain and unsurprisingly didn't have much of a career because he was unsurprisingly a fuckwit. Or the guy, or like, I can't remember the name exactly, the executive who took over the Sci-Fi Channel, and basically, like, one of his first actions was, I want to get rid of that fucking puppet show. That puppet show being Mystery Science Theater 3000, aka one of my favorite shows, and one of the best and most unique comedy shows ever made. My point is, while executive bullshit happens, and vindictive execs do happen, this is still 2019, and still just makes no, is something that a vice president would not get away with. especially if someone's second-guessing him on it. And again, he's firing he basically acted like that toward a female executive. Combine that with Stevie's harassment of Paige, and both of them should be fired by now. Like, in Paige's case, I get it. As it probably doesn't come through in voice, Paige is a black woman, so she may be a little afraid to, like, come forward. But at the same time, this is Me Too, the Me Too era. And she came forward about the low-rent guy on the banana splits with, again, no real threat of cancellation before this, who no one really likes, including the children. And there would probably be no repercussions for her. Like, she could at least tell her Rebecca, and Rebecca would probably take care of it, because no one likes Stevie. And I have ranted about this shit for way too long. We have some more characters to get through, but first, I want to go more into Stevie. Like, again, he wears a gold suit for both his death scene and before that, like, his last scene on the show. And this is a scene I want to talk about because it's just shot insane. Like, I'll give the director credit. Shot really cool. Like, it shows both Stevie having a fucking meltdown. Like, not, like, on stage, but he's just, like, having a big creepy smile on his face. Like, if he wasn't killed, I'd swear he had hauled out one of those robots and was killing people himself. Like, he is clearly tripping balls. The executives who made this movie must have shared their cocaine mountain with him. Okay, so we have some more cast members before I dive into the rest of the film analysis-wise. Because we want to kind of talk about the characters. Characters one by one. And I kind of have already with the family. But the rounding out the rest of our cast are Zoe, Harley's classmate, and really is just kind of there to give Harley someone to talk to and to kind of have a character arc where she's basically forced into going with him by her parents and then ends up befriending him by the end. Also, Harley straps on a pair of those butterfly wings you see kids with. I fucking love this kid. Like, he reminds me of me. He doesn't grow up too fast. He loves cartoons, which I still do. Not because I'm a man-child, but because cartoons are fucking awesome and just as valid as any other medium of television. And bitch. There's Thad and Poppy. Thad's a semi-obnoxious blogger. And Poppy's his girlfriend, who we will get to in a second, because her arc is amazing. But yeah, Thad is kind of obnoxious, and it is also nice to see a person of color in this film besides Paige. Not that there's anything wrong with Paige, it's just nice that they're, even if this is mostly white people, that they did add some color, as I'm not actually sure Thad's ethnicity, only because I don't know his actor's ethnicity, while his girlfriend is Asian. And I am looking it up. Kiroshan Naidu. Okay, I still don't know, but he is. He is a PO. Oh, okay, he's from Johannesburg, so he's African. That's awesome. I mean that. That's actually really awesome. That, like, of all the people to play your semi-obnoxious blogger character, Like, he has two moments. He bitches about his phone, which leads to a sweet moment that sadly ends really badly for, because this is a horror movie. But it is nice that of all the people recruited for this terrible idea, they got an African actor. I'm not going to gush too much about it. I'm not African. Ken, it's... And, but it's still nice to see someone outside of the U.S. and outside of the regular spectrum of parts get this this randomish shit. But yeah, he's kind of obnoxious, but it's also really hard to hate him because there's, like, when, like, the show's going on, which is also set up for murder later. But we'll get to that. He and Poppy are just really, like, jamming to the Banana Splits theme and just really happy to be there and just really geek out when it's time for the, when they get the Black Star ticket. Yeah, you get a Black Star on your ticket and Stoner Son decides to, because they didn't get one, actually goes out of his way to go talk to Paige, and not just because they had awkward forced romantic tension earlier. And before we get back to Thad and Poppy, why don't we talk about that real quick? Because I don't want to, because my fucking God. Austin himself is, like, as I said, the actor comes up, but basically there's, like, an awkward scene where he tries to hit on Paige and it just doesn't work out. Like, again, I am awkward with women. I get that. But at the same time, the romantic tension is just so fucking forced. Like, these actors are so uncomfortable. Like, you can tell, like, it feels like they're going to, you know, break out and say, I like you as a friend, you're a good person. Like, these poor actors. Like, the actor for Paige is nice enough and anything. She just doesn't have anything to work with compared to some of the actors. And given a lot of these characters are flat or fucking stupid, that's saying a lot. But, like, she's basically there to be kind of nice and be Stoner Boy's love interest, because we had to have a love plot that didn't end in a decapitation somehow. Again, we'll get back to Thad and Poppy in a second. But, like, yeah, it's just so forced, and their kiss at the end is just one of the most lifeless kisses I've ever seen on film. Like, my fucking God, how do you fail this bad at this? This bad at this, this bad at this, this bad at this. But seriously, how do you sucks so hard at romantic tension that this happens? Like, I don't blame the actors. I mean, okay, the actor playing the son does seem perpetually stoned, and I do think that's less him smoking some kush sticks and more him just genuinely his acting mode. But I'm also But, like, he's still, even for that, you can tell he's just uncomfortable and the romantic tension. Tension is just, ugh. Like, the kiss is just so uncomfortable. Like, it only lasts for half a second, but I just want it to end so badly. Like, and here's a fun fact I learned, because I followed the show Andy Mack, because I couldn't watch it, like, first run, and even when I was at a house with cable for a bit, doing a favor for a friend. I was babysitting her kid for a few months, since she couldn't, So I used, like, I watched their cable and, like, used their TV anywhere and all that good stuff. But I didn't watch Andy Mack season 3, because I was coming in at season 3, and I figured, as it turns out, as it's one of the few shows announced correctly, that Disney Plus would have it if I wanted to watch it in full. But I did
read the episode summaries as they came out in seasons 2 and 3 because I was curious, and the Wikipedia ones are, for now at least, very detailed. Yes, I followed a teen dramedy that closely. I opened this part of the episode with Rajala's murder trial. I think the possibility of me being Cool Beans has fucking passed. So yeah, that was terrible. Let's get back to the real heroes. I mean, the real couple. Thad and Poppy. But yeah, like, Thad does do some douchey white boy, which is ironic because he's not a white boy. And I'm not saying that for stupid irony. I'm saying that, like, this part was just, like, those lines are just the obnoxious thing you expect from the same guys who harassed the actor for Rose from The Last Jedi off of Instagram. Even though Rose was a great character, one of the only good things about the whole Canto Bight subplot, besides the great visuals and the Codebreaker guy they ended up getting, and seems like a nice, beautiful lady inside and out. Now, just a sweet person. So, yeah, I know that happened almost close to a year ago, but still, fuck that. And given the Rise of Skywalker's coming out, I wouldn't be surprised if they start up their harassment again, because they're fucking assholes. My point is, he just kind of does some actuating, which, no, but, yeah. Now I'm done playing Phaelus. But, yeah. And the phone thing becomes sweet when he's, like, doing his live stream thing on Instagram and all that. And then proposes to her on the set, which explains why he wanted his phone so bad. And why he snuck one in or stole it back. I was vague on which one it was. Like, they just have a really sweet relationship. Like, you can tell they love each other. Like, he does act like a douche to her briefly, but then you can tell, like, as vapid as they come off a little, just a smidge, and as weirdly as they're dressed, like, she's in a full feather costume, which, foreshadowing, but, like, they're just kind of adorable. It's really tragic when Thad gets sawed in fucking half not much later, and fucking decapitated. Ta-da! Which I think is the best death of the film, both because the whole saw in half trip, Poppy's really tearful, like, her actress, which, let me get her name here. Selena Martin, who's been in a few things, but nothing major, so part of the reason I do hope this gets a sequel, besides the film's genuine ridiculousness, is the simple fact that I really like her. She's a good actress, and Poppy has a good arc. After this, she goes fucking insane. She's basically in shock with grief, and then when Crazy Von Crazy Pants shows her her design, his design for an owl banana split, she takes the bits of the costume and just goes full insane, kills him, and is later seen in the sequel hook, driving what's left of the banana splits out of there. There is one of them awakened. So yeah, I want a sequel to this. Like, I know it's a bit early to say that, but it's true. This film was just, it had a weird tone to it. Like, yeah, I got into all the characters, so I can get into tone before I go circle back to the family, because I didn't really go into them that much. Oh, there's also a dad and his daughter who he wants to force into show business. It's nothing, and the guy gets his face melted off. Number two.
Sadly, not with a guitar solo, but again, this film is just weird. Like, it wants to be a black comedy, but the gore is so intense that it just doesn't work. As ones, I can't tell what it wants to be, like a satire of TV, a black comedy, like, is it taking itself seriously? Isn't? Like, you got children chained to their seats later, like when the Banana Splits do a show, which is also a ridiculous bit where the mom's like when they're murdering the executive guy, which good reference, by doing the Banana Split, which is ripping his limbs. Was that always it? Could we have killed Stevie earlier if they'd landed on that? Because, like, they do a wheel thing where they, like, always land on dance party or something like that. Right, given how nuts their creator is, I wouldn't be surprised if that was always what the Banana Split was. Like, that's part of the confusing part of it that makes this so bad it's good glory to me. It's like, it's hard to tell what the robots are. Like, did they achieve sentience? Is it just what Clyde said, or it's just like they're locked into a subroutine of the show must go on, and because the guy's canceling the show, they're trying to keep it going indefinitely? Is that part of it? But they've also always been kind of insane, because again, they almost ran over a goddamn child. Or is that just for motion sensors? I have questions, and they don't even seem that malevolent. Like, they kill a bunch of people. Most of the people they kill is assholes. Like the stepdad, who survives to the end of the film for... Okay, let's get to Beth. Beth doesn't do a ton, but still, like, has some good moments. Like, again, as I said, there's the weird moment. She's like, shield your eyes, children! Like, look away! Like, none of these kids were covering their fucking eyes before when the limbs started coming off. What the hell is this? I just laughed a lot. But, like, she has a legitimately badass line where it's just, like, the husband who cheated on her, the secretary, which, as I said, is outright called the cliche in the script. And I ranted about that enough earlier. But, like, basically, he tries to, like, I want you back. I realized that I learned something today. Hey. Animatronic monstrosities trying to kill me because I cheated on and my wife is an act of God. And you should listen to God or else he's going to send twice as many next time. But no, she instead decks the guy in a badass move, like basically takes the keys to their car and like clicks to unlock it. Getting to disarm the alarm behind her and says, I want a divorce. Me and Corey had to watch that at least 3 times. Like, he had no objection to me rewinding it because I had to rewatch it, and he just did it again anyway. Like, you can't blame me. That's awesome. And Harley's a nice enough kid. He's sweet, and again, I identify with him a lot. But yeah, like, the dad gets a sort of death scene, but somehow survives just so he can get that badass moment and he can get run over by the sequel hook. The Splits themselves, I guess I never got to them, but they're just sort of, like, they're all voiced by Eric Bauza, who I absolutely love as a voice actor. There. I mean, he's more like a side guy, but as looking this up shows, he was Rudolfo Rivera in El Tigre, and that is fucking awesome. Or you better know him, White Pantera! God, he was great in that. He, like, shows up in a lot of things. Talented voice actor, so he does a good job with the Splits. It's just they're basically kind of generic, and as I said, their motives are confusing. Like, do they hate the show? If so, why are they violently murdering people? Were they always programmed to violently murder people? Oh, and Clyde just hadn't activated that part. Like, I have questions I hope a sequel can answer. That's the other reason I want a sequel. Because none of this makes any goddamn sense, and that's part of what makes it, like, wonderful. Okay, so getting into brass tacks, plot, character-wise, as you can probably tell, most of them are pretty dull. Thad and Poppy were some of the only entertaining parts of it. Stevie was for exactly the wrong reason. Again, what was that Harvey Weinstein thing about? Like, you have him harassing women in his robe. Real subtle. Like, the script couldn't have been written before Me Too, and even if it was, the robe thing was very clearly added later. Jesus Christ. And no, I'm not over that, but the gore effects are great. Again, they don't help with the tone, but, they're over the top enough that they're really horrifying, but not so over the top that they're stupid. Like, that's something I can actually genuinely give this film. Like, the gore effects are fucking immaculate. Like, again, Thad getting his head cut off, the producer lady gets her head bashed in. Like, the only real bad effect is the guy getting his arms pulled off is very obviously fake and doesn't really have a lot of blood or anything. Probably because they wanted to. Actually, I don't know why. Seriously, you had a guy getting two other really gory murders. But, like, they're on video on demand, and they also know sci-fi has lax standards, so they just went for it, and I gotta admire that. Not a lot else to admire about the film, but why I think it's so weird is just because of the weird tones, the weird choices. Like, again, a banana split filmed in front of a live studio show in 2019. As I referenced earlier, to go over the three major kids networks, Disney to start, since I referenced them a few times during this, is either cartoons or mostly terrible live-action shows. I say mostly because I know some of them are okay enough, just not for me. I've grown out of them. Terrible things that do not belong in this world, like Austin and Allie back when that was airing, shows you how far out of the kids show loop I am. Though I also tried watching Coop and Cammy Ask the World. Those are 10 minutes of my life from separate episodes of the show I will never get back. And I watched Uncle Drew. That is almost 2 hours I will never get back. And I regret that less, because at least I had some morbid curiosity, even if I didn't end up getting a review out of it. I just didn't find enough material. Material. It's kind of stupid, and it has some little bits of heart. That was about it. Got a free Uncle Drew reviewing this. Also had a lot of... had about as many sex jokes as you'd expect. Though, thankfully, not as many as you'd think, and no naked guys in old age makeup. Probably because being NBA players, they'd be too attractive. We did get a half-naked Nick Kroll, and I will never scrub that out of my brain, so thanks. But yeah, getting back to this film, like, it's just tonally confused, but it's just so weird because of that. Like, it seems like something out of the 90s rather than the early 2000s or late 2010, despite the fact that it comes off. Like, it's a mishmash. Like, the premise comes out in the 90s. Like, an old show that's gone a while. Nick did more live shows. Like, they still, like, and live shows still happen, but just not like this. Like, live kids shows like this might exist somewhere. Oh, Access might be desperate enough to try that, but like, they're not the standard. They're the exception, not the rule, if they do exist. And it's just weird to me. But that's just it. The film's weird mishmash. Like, again, the unlikable parade of meat douchebags comes out of the early 2000s, as does the forced romance. The terrible acting, a sci-fi channel, the gore is actually legit good, Friday the 13th level gore. Then the biggest fan of the franchise, but I can't admire the practical effects there. Like, it's just a weird mishmash of things that just doesn't really come together well, but it's just really entertaining. Like, again, the actor for Stevie for Always Around is hammy. One or two of the characters are likable enough that it doesn't make the film grating. And again, it's just weird. Like, they can't, like, they have one death where he, like, hits him with a cartoony hammer, but then the rest are just kind of gory and weirdly toned, like a magic trick. Or, like, you have ones that make sense with the show, like the Rebecca one comes after she goes through an obstacle course. But then you have ones like a guy getting set on fire with an aerosol flamethrower that have nothing to do with the show and are just awesome. Even if the CGI is terrible. Like, that's the only time they use CGI. But at the same time, for such a... it's so weird, so out of place in 2019, and has such great gore effects. Like, I'm not even a big gore hound myself. I prefer... being scared, even if I have struggle through horror movies sometimes. But I can admire a good damn effect, and this did make me appreciate the gore. And there have been far better gore effects that unsettled me far more, I'm sure, in some in movies I've actually seen. But it doesn't make these effects any less impressive. Like, especially on a shoestring direct-to-TV and DVD budget. Like, this is a Sci-Fi Channel original movie. I was not expecting as good gore as I got. Like, I heard the gore effects were good, but I had no fucking idea. This is just... like, yeah, the kills are still really interesting and unique to the movie, even if they're kind of not really, like, set up well. Like, the lollipop, the obstacle course, but they're also like, okay, they're gonna use this to kill someone later. Okay, they're gonna use this to kill someone later. Like, check it off the list. But that's sidelined by the fact that there's just a lot of cool shit. Like, again, the gore effects are hard to describe simply because they're good. Like, a guy chokes to death on a fake lollipop shoved down his fucking throat. You won't see that in a lot of other films. So while this film may be weird and not good as a horror movie, it is so bad it's good simply because there's some good stuff in there. Likeable enough protagonist so it doesn't fall into... well, if all these people are such shitheads, why do I want to see any of them survive this? Like, you gotta have shitheads. And, I mean, it's like a hot dog. You gotta have hot dogs, you gotta have mustard. And... heard horror movies gotta have their standard shithead. But it's when you overload on them that really sucks the joy out of the film. It's why this film is... film works. While a lot of the characters are bland, you at least root for the mom because she's a nice enough person, and root for the kid, definitely, because he's... even if he's not the most fleshed out either, you can relate to him. Especially if you, like myself, watch cartoons long after some of your peers probably stopped. I will never stop. Not in a man-child way, but more of in a... I genuinely love this medium and think it's for more than children. And there are plenty of adult cartoons, but I think children's media is just as much... that's, again, why this is weird. Like, again, just the weird mishmash of settings and all that. But I still recommend watching it. You will not be entertained. There are some dry spots, I'll admit. It's not like one of the best so bad it's good movies. But I still had a fun time snarking at it. And whether you're alone or with a pal, especially if you're with a pal, you're going to enjoy this. And with it airing on Sci-Fi Channel later this year, if you have cable, you really have no reason but to check it out. You don't mean spoiling the plot and the kills. I really can't do, even with my words, I really can't do the kills justice, and the plot is basically not really important. Like, it's paper thin, and I hope the second one has a better one, but I also hope there is a second one. And I didn't think I'd want that going in, but, like, it's for the wrong reasons, because this is fucking weird. And the Banana Splits crossed over with the Suicide Squad. Yeah, that's one of the things I'm leaving you on. That happened. I have not read that issue. I do not know why I haven't. And yet, back when Hanna-Barbera was partner of DC, they did a lot of weird crossovers. And one is canon to Tom King's subpar Batman run. No, really. The Batman versus Elmer Fudd one apparently adapts Elmer Fudd into a villain, into a hitman. Holy shit. I will probably have to do these crossovers at some point. I have read Flintstones and Booster Gold because I had to back up leading into one of the ongoings. And because it's Flintstones / Booster Gold, and Booster hadn't done anything in Rebirth at that point. And the gift makes me wish he hadn't. Thank you, Linkara. You read it, so I didn't have to. All right. So to wrap this up, I highly recommend this film. Go seek it out. It's a tra-la-la-la-la-la good time. Okay, that was a terrible sign out, but yeah. Films were not great, it not good in the traditional sense, but it is so bad it's good gold to me. Like, again, it's not in my top tier so bad it's good movies like The Meg, which I will probably also review at some point, because it's Jason Statham fighting a shark. Or the recent Hobbs and Shaw. No, I think all the Fast and the Furious films are so bad it's good. Fast 5 to me is a legitimately good action film, but Hobbs and Shaw is over the top. Since I didn't do a review of that either, there's the line genocide schminicide in it. If that doesn't make you want to watch that movie, the fact that it has Jason Statham and The Rock taking on self-proclaimed black Superman, as in he is a cyborg. This is how far the franchise has come. He isn't from casual CD player theft to a British secret agent for hire and a government men agent and hunting down a cyborg with the government agent played by The Rock, tipped off by Ryan Reynolds. Also, Vanessa Kirby is in there, and she is a badass. And there is a scene where they try to yank a helicopter out of the sky. Do they succeed? You'll have to watch. My point is, Hobbs and Shaw was also fucking amazing. Well, I just didn't have enough material. This is fucking absurd, and I love it, and also there's too many dick jokes. Again, what you see on the cutting room floor sometimes leaks in here, but yeah. Banana Splits, go watch it. And that's it. That's all there is. Tune in next time when I'll be doing my top 10 Steven Universe episodes, which should actually be pretty soon. I want to get that out before the movie, and I've already got the list ready. I may also do a worst of list. We'll see how the best list goes. But yeah, top 12 Steven Universe episodes coming in hot next time. And until next time, courage. I love you all 3,000.